Thank you very much. As for the beginning of the lecture, which was missed from the recording, I have to tell you that it's not a big problem because, well, as the rest of the material in this lecture, it is well presented in the Axler textbook. So you can find everything, and in particular this beginning. So what I am doing now, I am in the proof of statement 7.4 or 7.6. What was here before? And before we just were in 7.5. So it can be recovered. By the way, let me remind you that you also can use Axler lectures on YouTube. Again, it is without proofs, but never mind. It's, the proofs are presented in the textbook and they are very easy. These properties are quite fundamental and they will be used also in other courses, though they will be, when they will be used, they will be proved there. I mean, something like functional analysis. Okay, so this is the next property. I probably would skip the proof. Then what should we do?
Is the proof not kind of the same as the last two?
This proof, the proof of that. Well, just again, consider by definition. The joint operator to lambda t, by the definition, is such an operator that it would be the same as that, this product, for any v and w. And after that, you use linearity, so you push lambda out. And then you do what? You use again this definition. Okay, but then we have to use homogeneity along the second variable. Now lambda, we want to move it in, and it would be lambda bar t star w. And we are done. So here, this calculations, the proof are very straightforward. You should do as it goes. Okay, so the next property that we have to consider, this is an involution. I mean that if you apply this star twice, you get the original operator. And again, this is the same game. You just consider the product of V by this terrible monster. Okay, no, it is okay, W. This should be different. And then you apply the definition several times. So it is the same as the star V W, right? Then you make conjugation. I mean, change the order of them. But you have to make complex conjugations here. Now you use definition of star gain, TW, V, under conjugation. And you make, you conjugate again. So it is double conjugation of V, TW. Well, double conjugation is just identity operation, so it is V, TW. And here we are, we see that T star, T double star W acts the same as TW, no difference. Okay? Are you with me?
And the adjunct is, am I saying right? Adjunct?
Adjunct, so yeah, yeah.
Adjoint, okay.
And adjoint, it's unique for adjoint, not adjoint. Adjunct, adjoint operator.
Okay. And it's unique for, you give an inner product and T, and that defines it. So it doesn't matter for U and B.
We have equality. So, okay, at the end of such calculation, what we have as the result of this, that V times T star star W is the same as V in the product of V and W. And now you can rewrite this as V times T double star W minus TW. Look, you have this vector, which is orthogonal to everybody. If a vector is orthogonal to everybody in an inner product space, then it is zero, according to some statement in the definition. Okay? And this is what we wanted to prove. Mm-hmm. Of course, adjoint to identity is identity. Check on your own. And adjoint to the composition is the composition, but in the opposite order. So it is like that. It should be like that. It cannot be anything else. Because of the following situation. So what is T and S, where they are? Say, let T be an operator, not operator, linear map from V to W. And then S should be the next operator from W to U. Now S star joined to S is from U to W. Adjoint to T is from W to V. And in this order, S star, T star, the composition is defined while the original linear maps were composed in the opposite order. But then you just again use the same type of arguments with the definition. You consider the inner product of S of vector V with ST star W and calculate, make some calculations and find at the very end of the day that this is V times T star S star W. You need to apply just this definition three times. So it's straightforward, I leave it. Any questions? Okay, then we have to discuss how the spaces related to this operators are related with each other. Okay, we consider an operator T. No, not operator again. Linear map. It is more general situation. We have V and W different spaces. Operator is when they are the same. So we have the adjoint operator in the opposite direction. And we have with each of these operators two spaces associated. So say for T, we have range of T, which is in W, and the null space, the kernel of T, which is in V. For T star, we have just opposite situation. We have a null space in T star because it acts in the opposite direction, and the range in V. And the statement that I am going to make and then prove is that in each of these spaces, the corresponding subspaces, oops, sorry, I wrote the wrong thing. Range, not of V, of course, range of T star. That these subspaces are related as orthogonal complements with each other. So range T, orthogonal complement to it, is the null of T star, and so on. So there are four identities. Of course, the same identity can be rewritten in this way. If the orthogonal complement of range T is the null space of T star, then the range is the orthogonal complement of this null space. And similar for things in the other space. So we have four equalities, but and all of them are mentioned in the statement 7.7 in Axberg textbook. However, only one of them deserves proof. Why?
Since T is T star star.
Yes, because T is T star star, so you can swap T and T star. This is one thing, and another thing that if, as I said, if one space is orthogonal complement of the other, then vice versa, the other is orthogonal complement of the first one. So we have to choose to prove only one thing. Say, let us prove that the null space of T star is the orthogonal complement of the range. So let us take some element from here, say W from null space of T star. What does it mean that it is from the null space? It means that T star of W equals zero, right? Now, what does it mean that some vector is equal to zero? It means that it is orthogonal to everybody. It means that for any V from V, the inner product of V and T star W equals zero. Now we can use the definition of T star, this identity. So this is equivalent to the statement that T V is orthogonal to W. And this means, and this is for all V, for all V, this means that W belongs to the orthogonal complement of range T. So I started from a vector in the null space of T adjoint and proved that it belongs to the right hand side of this equality. And well, really, I didn't prove implication. All the connections here were two-sided. I mean that each of the implications was double. So I could use the same arguments, but in the opposite direction to prove that any element from the range T orthogonal complement of the range T belongs to the null space, safe and only. Okay, now we discussed so far this adjoint apparatus from the point of view of abstract theory. What about matrices? How it looks like in matrix world. So let us fix basis. But since we want to take it to use the fact that our spaces are inner product spaces, it makes sense to consider not arbitrary basis, but orthonormal basis. So, okay, let us consider a linear map from V to W in the product spaces. Let us take basis E1, etc., En in V, and let it be orthonormal basis. And similarly, we take basis F1, etc., Fm, dimension may be different, and it is orthonormal basis in W. Then our operator has matrix in this basis, and its adjoint has matrix in the same basis. How these matrices are related to each other? The answer is very simple. If you take one of them and transpose and conjugate, you'll get the other one. So the matrices are for T and the adjoint of T are transpose conjugated. Conjugate, transpose. Well, anyway, you have to apply two operations, and since they commute, you may use the words also in different orders. This is the statement. Now, how to prove this statement? To prove this statement, we just need to use calculations with basis. What does it mean that, what are the coefficients in these matrices? So let us start with T. The columns of the matrix representing T are coordinates of the images under this T of elements of our basis. So you have to take the image of EK, E sub K. We know how to express it. It should be expressed, well, it is not in this space. So we pick up a vector from V, but now it is in W and it should be expanded in this basis. So the result, since this is an orthonormal basis, looks like that. You have TEK in the product with FJ. And you multiply it by Fj. So this is a standard formula for expansion in with respect to orthonormal basis. The coefficients are calculated by this formula. So as in the products of the vector that we want to expand and the basis vectors. Okay. Now we have to do the same with T star. So for T star, everything will be like that, but just E and F will be exchanged. So we have to consider Fj, its image under T star, and write down that this is the sum of inner product JFJ with EK and multiplied by EK. And now we just need to realize how these two numbers are related. We know that, okay, so let us take this coefficient T star FJ EK. It is the same as FJ T EK. It's close to what we have there, besides that the rows of J and K are opposite. In one case, here K is the number of the column and J is the number of row, and here it's opposite. But now also we want to move it, we want to transpose it, and when we transpose it, we have to conjugate. This is the same as this conjugated by the Hermitian symmetry. And that's it. This means that the matrices are conjugate transpose. Is it clear? Questions?
So this relies on the fact that the basis that you picked in both of the vector spaces have to be orthonormal, right?
Yes, otherwise I wouldn't be able to write down these nice formulas.
So if it wasn't orthonormal, then the T star wouldn't be the conjugate transpose of T, right?
Well, first of all, then you will need to... Yeah, of course not. Of course. But it wouldn't be appropriate to consider in this inner product space some skew basis. Of course, you can correct these formulas, take transformation between those orthonormal bases and arbitrary bases. You can use Gram-Schmidt algorithm everywhere and combine them, and then you will get more complicated formula. Yeah. To the best of my knowledge, check. I think this is correct. I would be surprised. Now, so far, we discussed the situation when we have two inner product spaces and the linear map between them. Now, let us switch to operators. Now we have an operator. That means that this is a linear map from space to itself, and assume that the space is still an inner product space. Then several classes of operators are better than others. We can distinguish a better operator than just usual linear operator. operators which respect somehow the structure, the structure of inner product. And the first operator, this is what is called self-adjoint. Self-adjoint operator. As it is seen from the name, the definition is that this is an operator which is adjoint to itself. So it's an operator such that T equals T star. So what does it mean? It means that for any two vectors from our vector space V, now we have only one, the inner product TV and W is the same as the product of V and TW. The matrix of such operator with respect to an orthonormal basis would coincide with its conjugate transpose. So the elements of it would be like this. If you have Aij here, then on the symmetric position with numbers j and I, so Aji would be conjugate, complex conjugate number to Aij. What does it mean for diagonal elements? On the diagonal, you have real numbers because these numbers are self-conjugate. Aii is conjugate to Aii. And this is a property of real numbers. Real numbers are the numbers, complex numbers, which are invariant under complex conjugation. So this is how this operator looks in the in matrix form, in coordinates. Okay. They have some interesting properties, self-adjoint operators. That's why we study them. First of all, eigenvalues of self-adjoint operator are real. There is a general feeling, I don't know how to make it formal and how to deduce it from something reasonable. But general feeling is that self-adjoint operators are like real numbers. You consider, well, an operator in a complex vector space is a sort of generalization of complex number. And now we distinguish among all these operators about this generalization of complex numbers some part, which are also operators, but they behave like real numbers. And when they are reduced to just multiplication by a number, this is multiplication by a real number. Okay, so anyway, this is the theorem, 7.13. So any eigenvalue of a self-adjoint operator is real. We started with some axioms, so it was not necessary to stay with complex numbers. We could have vector field, vector spaces over any field with involution. And then the words complex and real should be replaced by arbitrary and self-conjugate. So real means some numbers which are equal to the conjugate. And now I will prove exactly this statement. So, okay, let T be a self-adjoint operator. And lambda be its eigenvalue. Eigenvalue with vector v. So what does it mean? It means that T v equals lambda v. Okay, let me consider then the product. TV by V in the product of these two vectors. By the definition of self-adjoint operator, it is the same as the product of T of V by TV in the other way around. And now we know that TV is lambda V. Okay, so we replace TV with lambda V. Then we can take away lambda, but this is the right position, so lambda jumps out with a complex conjugate value of itself. And then this is lambda bar times v squared, the norm of v squared. Okay. Now we can calculate the same things in the other way around. So let us take TVV. TV is lambda V multiplied by V. Now we can take lambda as it is. And this is lambda times the same square of norm. Square of norm is not zero because our vector is not zero. And we can divide by it the whole equality, and we get that lambda bar is lambda. And this means that this is a real number. That's it. Questions? No questions? Okay. May I go ahead? This theorem is proven. Now, a little bit more sophisticated, well, let's see. Subtle discussion about eigenvalues and eigenvectors. Statement 7.14 over C. If for any vector V in our space, its image is orthogonal to it, well, if and only if, T is zero. This statement is not correct for real numbers, for vector spaces over real numbers. And there is a simple example. We have this example always. Rotation by right angle. Here, always V and TV are orthogonal. But nonetheless, T is not zero. So at least in this direction, it doesn't hold true. Of course, if T is zero, then any vector is orthogonal to TV. But we are over C. Over C. The proof in the textbook looks like a trick and related to some calculations. So I want to show you these calculations together with motivation of it. It relies on a lemma. It relies on a lemma. Over complex numbers, there is a way to express product of any two vectors through squares. Squares. Two squares of appropriate bilinear form. At least it can be expressed via things like that, TVV. So arbitrary in the product of the image of some vector and some other vector can be expressed as some combination with appropriate V and of in the product of a vector V by its image. Here is how it is proved. In the textbook, this is just given dogmatically, just a formula, quite cumbersome. Let me show how it can be obtained. Let me take vector U plus W and calculate T of U plus W by U plus W. If I am in this setup, then this is zero. So I'm calculating now zero. I will express it through something which will involve non-zero vectors as well. Okay, so I just open brackets. So what if it is? Tu times U plus Tw times U plus Tu times W plus Tw times W. That's it. I just open brackets. Well, in this formula, in the right hand side, the first term and the last term are zero if we have this condition satisfied. But then we have these two terms. They are not equal in general. I want to prove that they are equal to zero. Well, instead of U plus W, I can take U minus W and do the same. T of U minus W. Oops. Times U minus W. What is this? It is again TU times U. Now minus TW times U minus TU times W plus TW times W. Well, why plus? Because I have minus TW times minus W. So I take away minus sign twice. This is yet not enough to express everything, all the products through squares. But we have extra opportunities. We can take over complex numbers. This and that. Okay. U minus IW, U minus IW, and what's going on? The first term is as it was. Then the second one will be I times TWU. The next will be negative I times TUW. And the last one will be the same as before. TWW. Look, why here plus I and there minus I? Because in the first case, my I is on the first argument, T times negative. Sorry. I mean this. Yeah, otherwise I will need to switch something. So here I move I from there. And there I, in the third term, I move it from the second position. And the last formula like this. And here the signs switch. Well, the last term is always like this. And then, so we have this four arguments. Assume that we have this condition of orthogonality satisfied. Then all these things are zero. All these things are zero. All these things are zero. And now, let us multiply these identities by one here for the first one, negative one here. Then negative I, no, just I. No, I there and negative I there. No, here, sorry. I multiply the third line by I, the last line by plus I. Then all the coefficients in this column will be plus one. As for the coefficients in that column, these two will be plus one. Now this one will be minus one, and this will be minus one. Negative I times negative I is negative one. Positive I times positive I is negative one. So this column will disappear, while here I will get four times TWU. Well, if we do not think about proof of this modus statement, it would be a little bit more. It would be calculation of this in terms of all these guys which are encircled with red on my picture. So it will be expression of dot product. This kind of product in the product TWU in terms of dot products of this kind, TV times V. But for our purposes, all these guys in red are zero. Here we have also zero, and we see that this is zero after summing up. So what we get? We get that if we have this condition satisfied, and then we see that TW is orthogonal to anything. In particular, for example, it is orthogonal to itself. And this means that it is zero vector. So this means that T is zero. So I proved implication in this direction. In the opposite direction, the statement is trivial. TV would be always zero, and it is orthogonal to anything. Okay.
Is the only condition that the field is complex?
Yes, here.
And T is linear operator.
Yes, T is not assumed to be any self-adjoint or whatever. It is just a linear operator. So basically, what we discussed now is that over complex numbers, any bilinear form, can be expressed through norms, through squares of this bilinear form. It's a little bit more, but the calculation show that I can express a product of any. So let me introduce new product, W by U as my inner product, like this. And this is another inner product. So any inner product, it is not symmetric. It is not assumed to be symmetric. But it is sesquilinear form over complex space. And I proved that if it is zero on the diagonal, if it is zero for W equals U, then it is zero. And moreover, this inner product is expressed in terms of the form on the diagonal, sort of. This is a generalization of the fact that angles can be expressed through lengths. Why angles? Angles can be obtained from dot product, whatever dot product is in the product, and norms. And here we have a calculation which expresses inner product, not necessarily symmetric in any way, through the restriction on diagonal, but only for complex numbers. Observe that here I use multiplication by I and properties of I. It's not for any field with involution, not at all. It is just directly about C. Any question? More questions? Okay. Now, again, a statement about complex numbers. It is theorem 715 from the textbook. We assume that everything is over complex numbers. And the statement is that T V times V is real for any V. Then T, well, really, if and only if T is self-adjoint. Well, how to write down that TVV is real? I'm going to prove this. What does it mean that it is real?
It equals its conjugate.
It is equal to conjugate. So let me write it in this way. The difference between this and that is zero. Now I can move a little bit this. This is inner product. So I can rewrite the second summand in that way. This is V times TV. I change the order. V and TV, I change the order. Under the changing of order, conjugation happens. And now I can, in the same term, I can move a T to the left-hand side by the definition of conjugate. So it is the same as TVV minus T star V V. Okay. And then this is equal to T V minus T star V. V. So we have an operator T minus T star, which has this property that under this operator, the image of any vector becomes orthogonal to the vector itself. So remember that our assumption that this product is real, TVV, means that everything here in this line is equal to zero. So we have that we are in the assumption of the preceding theorem. This is a complex situation, so we have an operator, real operator, and it has this property that any vector is orthogonal to the image of the same vector under this operator. So this means that the operator is equal to zero. And this means that T is self-adjoint. T equals T star. Okay. Now I can run the proof of the converse. I can start with this equality. I can write down that this is equal to zero. And then make all these calculations in the opposite way and obtain that then TVV is real. That is if and only if. It's necessary and sufficient. Okay. Then the next theorem. Says that if T is self-adjoint and now it is over real numbers, over real numbers, and TV is orthogonal to V for any V, then T is zero. So, how to prove this? To prove that T is zero, it is enough to prove that the image of any element is zero. To prove that this TU is zero is enough to prove that its inner product with W is zero. So I have to prove this. So this is my dream. I put here question mark because this is what I want to prove. Sorry. I have to remove something here. Okay. And this thing can be expressed in the way that we did. So let us consider again T of U plus W. And T of U minus W times U minus W. So this is TUU plus TWU plus W, sorry. Plus, so the same formulas, probably I have to use technique here, where they are. Oh no, it wouldn't work in this way. To take enough here. Right. Duplicate. And copy. But now I'm in a bit better position than before. Then it was arbitrary operator. Now I have self-adjoint operator. And then self-adjoint operator, I can move this T to that side. So this is the same as U T W. And then it is over real, so I can change the order without punishment of complex conjugation. So this first equality turns into twice TWU, forget about this. And here it should be minus twice TWU. And now I multiply the first identity by one, the second by negative one, sum up. And what I get out of this is on the left hand side, T of U plus W, U plus W plus minus. T of difference of the difference times this difference. And on the right hand side, I have four times TWU or TUW. And what's happening here? This is disappearing. So I have an expression for this bilinear form in terms of quadratic form, in terms of its restriction to diagonal. So if the restriction of the to the diagonal is zero, then the operator is zero. But this works only for self-adjoint operators, which was not needed in the complex situation. So it's a little bit tricky here. Okay. Many small theorems. They will be combined next time to some fabric, which will give us classification of self-adjoint operators and normal operators in a product space, and there will be special considerations for complex and real. So I'm sorry, it's a little bit too technical today. One more thing that we will be able to do is normal operators. There is a little bit broader class of operators than self-adjoint operators. They are called normal. I don't know why they are called normal. Probably because people wanted to praise them, to say that they are good. What does it mean, normal? Normal means that it commutes with its conjugate. This is the definition of normal operator. So again, we have inner product space. In this inner product space, we consider an operator and we can consider a joint operator, and it may happen that operator and the joint operator do not commute. But this is not true. If it is true, then this operator is normal. And now if the operator is normal, well, operators can normal operators can be characterized in another way. namely T is normal if and only if the images of vector under it and under its conjugate are the same. Well, let us prove it. What does it mean that it is normal? This is just T star minus T star T equals zero. This happens if and only if for any vector the vector, the product of this vector in the product by its image by this zero operator is zero. So the operator is zero when we have that this image is zero, and this I can rewrite as follows: T star T V V equals T star V V. And then I can disclose what is this and what is that. I can move T star to another side, and I will get T V T V. And here I can move T to the other side, and I will get T star V, T star V. And this is nothing but the square of the norm of V. And this is the square of the norm of TV. And we are done. So we proved that if T is normal, then we have this. And okay, it seems that my time is over now. What should I? So next week we will arrange a midterm exam on Friday. So it will start on Friday morning and finish on Saturday morning. And it feels like a homework. That's all for today. Any questions?
Can I ask a question about the homework?
Yes, please.
On the last problem, are 2 and 9 the only eigenvalues, or can there still be other eigenvalues?
Oh, I have to look. Tell me a little bit more about this.
It says let an operator T in a vector space V with dim V equals 6 and has eigenvalues 2 and 9. Prove that V is null of T to the fourth direct sum range T to the fourth.
Right. Okay. And is there some specific question, or you're just
I'm just wondering, like, does the question mean that, like, 2 and 9 are the only eigenvalues, or does it mean that, like, 2 and 9 are some of possibly more
eigenvalues? No. It is all the eigenvalues. Otherwise, it is impossible to solve. Wait, no, it's enough that just to have them.
Yeah, it says that the dimension has to be 6, so it should be enough that just it has 2 eigenvalues, 2 and 9.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should work either way.
If there are more eigenvalues, you will get, you may get even a stronger result. that some lower power will be good. This is about relations between, that's about decomposition of your operator. So you have at least two eigenvalues. That means that at least two generalized eigenspaces are there. So they have some dimensions. And this restricts the size of Jordan boxes. Jordan boxes couldn't be too large. And each Jordan box is annihilated by some power of your operator. Okay, anyway, I answered to your question, right? Did I?
Yes.
Good. Other questions? At least you didn't ask me to solve the problem, right? That's, you asked about statement.
Mm-hmm. Professor, if we have a question on, let's say, statements for the midterm, will we be able to ask you them on Friday?
Of course.
Okay.
Of course, I will keep, at least for a while, the connection with Zoom, like in the case of office hours. For office hours, it is a disaster. Each time I have to do something by hands. So if you will have questions, please, and I will be available by chance over the Zoom, please don't hesitate to ask me by email. I will be then able to answer to you and to open this connection, or just answer in writing, something like that. Other questions? Okay, then. Okay, that's all for today. Thank you. Have a nice weekend.